With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. California Senator introduced legislation to expand disaster relief access. U.S. Senator Alex Padilla has announced legislation to improve disaster relief to help specialty crop farmers recover from catastrophic events. Along with the bill's co-author, Senator Tom Tillis, a Republican of North Carolina, Padilla introduced the Fair Access to Agricultural Disaster Programs Act. The legislation waives adjusted gross income restrictions that prevent some farmers from receiving disaster relief under USDA programs. Padilla said the measures could help California growers who produce high-value specialty crops but are saddled with high land costs and escalating expenses. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. And a few says significant farm bill delays are possible. National Farmers Union President Rob LaRue says it is clear that the 2023 farm bill will not be ready before the September 30th deadline. It could be a while before it's in place due to being a presidential year next year. He stresses that the next farm bill needs to be the right legislation for U.S. farmers and ranchers.
Just getting any bill done that doesn't kind of make improvements to the safety net, doesn't make improvements on the most recent farm bill, I think will be a missed opportunity. So it's not just about getting a farm bill done yet this year, but getting a good and the correct farm bill done.
And although it's hard to know what the next 5 years will bring, LaRue says it's important the next farm bill has resiliency measures in it, such as a strong crop insurance program.
I think there's room to improve it by making some of those policies more available to more types of farmers out there. I think that looking at the commodity programs, I think there's ways to strengthen the safety net on those.
NFU is also advocating for a dedicated competition title in the next farm bill that would include things like cattle market price discovery and transparency, along with increasing enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act. They are also advocating for a permanent disaster program that would help to eliminate delays in the implementation and unfair targeting support while incentivizing the use of sustainable climate-smart farming practices. NAFB contributed to that report. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
The delay in the grape season played a role in how impactful the recent tropical storm was for growers. President of the California Table Grape Commission, Kathleen Nave, said the storm could have potentially been worse had production not been a few weeks behind average.
The question of the lateness of the season and the maturity of the fruit is, in some ways, has been a bit of a double-edged sword. So, yes, the season was late, which meant there was more fruit out on the vine at this time than there would have been in what we might call a normal season. But what it also meant is that for many of the varieties, the fruit was less mature than it would have been. So having mature fruit take a rain is not a positive thing. So the less mature the fruit is when it takes a rain, generally speaking, the better it fares. So it was a bit of a double-edged sword that the season was late.
California's 2023 walnut production is expected to reach 790,000 tons, marking a 5% increase compared to 2022. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, walnut production was measured at only 752,000 tons last year. USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service reports that the latest forecasted increase is based on 385,000 bearing acres, 4% less than the estimated 400,000 acres in 2022. The 2023 walnut objective measurement results show an average nut set per tree of 1,004, indicating a 2% increase from last year's average of 981. Additionally, the survey found that 99.2% of the nuts had sound kernels in shell. Preliminary figures also indicate that last year's crop has effectively been sold out, which is bringing some optimism to the state's walnut industry. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
What GMO crops are grown and sold in the U.S.? Well, there's corn, like me, soybeans, canola, sugar beets, and cotton. Typically, we're ingredients in certain foods. GMO alfalfa, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are used as animal food. And while you won't find many GMOs in the produce section, there are versions of GMO apple, summer squash, potato, and papaya in a few markets. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, as election season begins to kick into full gear, the agricultural organization Farmers for Free Trade waits for candidates to share their positions on the issues. Executive Director Brian Kuehl says they're letting candidates know how important trade is.
We want to see all of the presidential candidates in this election cycle understand the importance of trade. So Farmers for Free Trade recently wrote a sign-on letter signed by 30 ag associations, so soybeans, corn, pork, dairy, you go down the list, all signed on to a common statement to all the presidential candidates, both Democrats and Republicans, saying, look, trade is critically important for food and ag. The U.S. is falling behind. You need to understand the importance of this issue to rural America.
He says another key topic is tariff negotiation.
Everyone needs to understand tariffs are taxes. It's a tax a country puts on a product when it comes in. So if another country puts a tariff on our products, it makes our product more expensive in that country. Same thing, if we put tariffs on products coming into the U.S., it makes those products more expensive.
Along those lines, he says one recent campaign promise is troubling.
You know, we're really concerned about President Trump a week ago or 2 weeks ago said, if elected, he wants to put a 10% tariff on all products coming into the United States. He said he wanted to create a ring around the U.S. economy. Yeah, I think most economists look at that and just shudder. It's a really bad idea. It's a bad idea because it'll cause inflation on products coming into the U.S. So if you go to a store and you want to buy a toothbrush and it's 10% more expensive, or you want to buy a shirt and it's 10% more expensive, you're going to notice that. But also, if we start putting 10% tariffs on other countries sending their products to us, they're going to start putting tariffs on our products, which usually falls on the shoulder of the farmers. We've seen that time and time again. So suddenly we'll be shut out of markets, and Australia and Brazil and other countries are going to have a competitive advantage.
In other news, another week of significant topsoil moisture shortness nationwide is the news of note within USDA's latest topsoil moisture report. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey looks at states with significant numbers.
Idalia did produce some wet conditions in the lower southeast. Leading that region right now is South Carolina, 20% surplus, Georgia, 17%, Florida, 14%. We also have some lingering wetness in the northeast where it's been a very wet summer. Vermont, 21% surplus. And then we had some notable news-making flooding in the deserts of the west. Nevada coming in this week, leading that region, 15% surplus. The bigger picture is the pervasive dryness in a lot of key agricultural production areas. If you look at the Rockies and the Plain states, seven of those have topsoil moisture rated more than one half, very short to short, led by Texas at 95%. That's the highest number in the nation. Then in the Northwest, a separate area of dryness, leaving fields rather dry as we move into the winter wheat planting season. Washington State leads that area, 83%, very short to short, greater than 70%, very short to short in Minnesota and Iowa. Mid-Atlantic, it's just been kind of subtly dry the last few weeks, pushing topsoil moisture above 70%, very short to short, just in the last week in Maryland and Delaware.
And he has a look at pasture and rangeland conditions.
We have two main areas where we have pretty lush pastures, even here as we head into late summer, early autumn. One of those areas is in the eastern United States. Several states, including Ohio and Tennessee, still at or above 70% of the pastures rated good to excellent. Then we have a little area in the Intermountain West in the Central Rockies that has had an exceptionally cool, wet summer. And those states where we see pastures and rangelands above 50% includes Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado. Leading the nation, 89% good to excellent this week is Wyoming. A very unusual situation there where it seems like just about every raindrop has managed to find its way into Wyoming this summer.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, according to the Livestock Marketing Association, their members have a front row seat to a disturbing trend. That's the continued loss of livestock producers across the U.S. and they're seeing this as a critical threat not only to the livestock industry, but to the nation's food supply. That's why LMA is launching an initiative to strengthen producers' bottom lines and incentivize the next generation of farmers and ranchers. Joe Goggins, who is owner of Public Auction Yards in Billings, Montana, said despite recent record-high livestock prices, it's tougher than ever to be a producer. Lack of access to land and labor, over-regulation, and input costs are causing more people to exit the business while preventing new producers from getting started. He said, "We continue to disperse cow herds. We continue to disperse flocks of sheep. We continue to lose thousands and thousands of acres out of protein production. And we really feel that we'd better push back. We'd better unite this industry somehow, some way to try to encourage and incentivize people to be in this business." Goggins said, "By working together, all industry segments can accomplish so much more than they can individually." He said, "I encourage producers of all types, sizes, and locations to reach out to people in their network and to the organizations they are a part of to have conversations about the biggest barriers to profitability. Of course, those include, but are not limited to, the debt tax, lack of incentives to keep land and livestock production, and competition for land and margin." Mandy Geistwild, who alongside her husband Sean and family owns and operates Gillespie Livestock Company in Fredericksburg, Texas. She said the initiative will help market owners help their customers, and she's seen just how much help is needed. She noted, "Our taxes are going up incredibly because of the value of our land is rising astronomically. So a lot of what is Dorper sheep and Angus cattle is now becoming vineyards and agritourism." But Goggins noted that while the message applies anywhere, the implications could be much further reaching. He said it's not only for our benefit if we keep these ranches in production. He said we look at this thing as preserving our food independence in this country and preserving our national security. If you'd like to join this conversation and learn more about this initiative, simply go to the Livestock Marketing Association website, lmaweb.com. And I would imagine this will be a topic of discussion during the 2024 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show. That event will be held January 31st through February 2nd for business meetings, educational sessions, engaging speakers, and of course you could have a little family fun. Attendees can take part in a variety of educational opportunities, including the Cattle Facts Outlook Seminar. Of course, registration for the event is now open. To learn more about it, simply go to convention.ncba.org. But again, that's coming up January 31st through February 2nd. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
World food prices were lower last month. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The UN's Food and Agricultural Organization's Food Price Index averaged 121.4 points in August. That's a 2.6-point drop from July. The August drop pushed the index 38 points lower than its peak reached in March of 2022. The overall drop was driven by declines in the index for dairy products, vegetable oils, meats, and cereals, while the sugar price index rose modestly. The dairy price index averaged 111.3 points in August and took the biggest drop, down 4.6 points from July, the eighth straight monthly decline. The vegetable oil index averaged 125.8 points, which is just over 4.5 points below July. The sugar price index averaged 148.2 points in August, up 1.9 points from July and as much as 37.7 points from its level in the same month of last year. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen. A significant ag nuisance case was recently decided. The case involved property rights, public roadways, and a state right to farm law. In a recent case, a hog farmer needed to dispose of hog waste. He owned a field about 2 miles away, so he thought he could simply bury pipelines in the road right-of-way ditch for 2 miles past his neighbors and tie it into his pivot irrigation in the field. He didn't bother getting the permission of his neighbors, the county, or the legislature. Once the project was completed, the liquefied hog waste was sprayed on a field near a neighboring farmer's home. Ultimately, the neighbor sued for trespass and nuisance and won a jury verdict at trial, receiving substantial damages. The court also assessed the hog farmer with punitive damages for his willful and reprehensible conduct. The appellate court affirmed. The points of law are this. A landowner owns the road ditch right-of-way, and someone else can't use the ditch for their own private purpose without getting permission. Also, nuisance is the unreasonable interference with another person's use and enjoyment of their property. In addition, this state's right-to-farm law didn't protect the hog farmer from a nuisance suit because his trespass was a violation of state law, and it was the trespass that led to the nuisance. Be a good neighbor. Respect other people's property rights. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen.
The College Aggies program kicks off this week. Animal Agricultural Alliance's College Aggies program connects students who are interested in promoting agriculture with current agricultural influences, allowing them to learn how to effectively communicate with audiences both online and on campus. The scholarship program starts this week, and more than $20,000 in scholarships are up for grabs. During the program, student participants receive 9 interactive and educational weeks of content to help them become confident and effective communicators for agriculture. This year's mentor lineup includes Jessica Peters, a.k.a. CJS Farm, Emily Chapman, a.k.a. Dairy Girl Fitness, Natalie Kavarik, Brandy Buzzard, Ryan Goodman, a.k.a. Beef Runner, and many more. Throughout the program, students will compete for points to win money each week. Participants are challenged to host events virtually or on their campus to talk about modern agriculture with their peers. Last year, students reached more than 8.5 million people online and 2,300 people in person. Top individuals from the competition will be invited to attend Alliance's 2024 Stakeholder Summit in Kansas City come May. To learn more, visit animalagalliance.org.
The August edition of USDA's quarterly agricultural trade forecast usually generates interest as it contains the department's first outlook at the new fiscal year. And Sean Arena of the Office of the Chief Economist says the initial U.S. Ag export forecast for fiscal year 2024 indicates
U.S. exports to be $172 billion. This is down $5.5 billion or 32% from last year.
If realized,
that would be about $24.1 billion lower than that banner year set in 2022. But keep in mind that that was a record year. In fact, that $172 billion will still mark us as having the third highest year of exports.
The year-over-year reduction is largely driven by lower exports of soybeans and soybean meal.
Soybeans for FY24, we are forecasting $26.5 billion. And that would be down about $5.8 billion from FY23, attributed to lower expected U.S. production forecast, tighter supply conditions relative to last year for soybeans. There's competition from South America, and we also have high domestic crush demand.
And dairy products.
Our exports, we're forecasting it down for this coming year by $1.2 billion. And this is reflecting lower global prices for skim milk powder, whey, cheese, and butter.
Forecast for additional U.S. commodity exports for the new fiscal year include
corn, we are forecasting $13.3 billion for FY24. That is slightly up by about $500 million, mainly on higher volume, which more than offset the lower prices. Wheat, we are forecasting $6.8 billion. This is unchanged for this fiscal year of 2023. Beef, we are also forecasting lower total sales values for 2024. Poultry and pork, we are forecasting it up slightly on strengthening demand and more stable supplies.
And for horticulture,
we are forecasting to increase relative to fiscal year 2023. And actually, we're forecasting a record for 2024 of $39.5 billion.
With cotton export forecast down slightly at FY24. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
How are GMO plants made? First, scientists look for a desired trait in a plant, animal, or even bacteria. It could be a trait like resistance to drought, insects, or viruses. Then they copy the gene that contains that trait and insert it into the DNA of the plant they want to improve. Scientists then grow that plant to see if it adopts the desired trait. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
The outlook for commodities and the stock market now through the fourth quarter looks a bit lower in our view. I'm Mark Oppel with your bottom line report, brought to you by Kloss Equipment and Helena. Helena says improve your fertilizer efficiency and increase yield potential next season right now. Soil-enhancing humic compounds like Resurge. Visit HelenaAgra.com to learn more. Corn and soybean harvesting has started earlier than normal in many areas with the quick dry down here the past 2 weeks. We see no surprises in today's crop report, with the exception maybe of some world soybean numbers. So we would look for, again, with the harvest underway, the path of least resistance to be lower. Look for December corn to hold, though, 474, 475 if this week, and November soybeans, 1342, 1344 overall. This is the bottom line report. Refuel your farm equipment for free. Thanks to Kloss Equipment, register for $10,000 worth of free farm diesel. Go to fuel.kloss.com. That's fuel, C-L-A-A-S.com. Superior Livestock recent video auction showed slowdown in demand, but still strong prices. 58,700 head of cattle, 30 states with the best demand for weaned calves and calves on cows, $4 to $8 higher. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
As election season begins to kick into full gear, an agricultural organization waits for candidates to share their positions on the issues. Executive Director of Farmers for Free Trade, Brian Keel, says they're letting candidates know how important trade is.
We want to see all of the presidential candidates in this election cycle understand the importance of trade.
He says a key topic is tariff negotiation.
Everyone needs to understand tariffs are taxes. It's a tax a country puts on a product when it comes in. So if another country puts a tariff on our products, it makes our product more expensive in that country. Same thing, if we put tariffs on products coming into the U.S., it makes those products more expensive. So consumer goods, for example. We would like to see tariffs reduced generally. We think government should get out of the way and let business trade. And if government gets out of the way, the market is going to work most efficiently.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
Normally, or for the last 20 years or so, food prices each year have averaged about a 2% inflation rate, but food shoppers last year saw grocery store food prices rising and literally exploding, going up by an average of about 11.5% over what we paid in 2021. But this year, we'd all like me to be able to use the other sound effect, you know, one that would reflect lower prices, but
No.
Food prices are still expected to be higher than a year ago, but not by anything close to 11.5%.
We don't really expect to be going over 6% in terms of food at home prices.
That's Agriculture Department economist Matt McLaughlin. One of his jobs, track retail food prices and forecast what those prices are going to do. Tricky proposition at best. For a few months this year, it looked like, month by month, that food prices were stabilizing on average, and that caused Matt to reduce his forecast for this year by a little bit. However, this past month, prices shot up again, so for all food averaged together.
We increased our forecast from 4.9 to 5.2%, meaning that we're expecting to go from a little under 5% increases to a little bit over 5% increases.
But that includes away from home foods. Narrowing it down to food we buy at the grocery store, here is his latest food price projection for 2023.
For food at home, we are expecting price increases to be between 4.4 and 6.1%. Right now, year to date, if we were to take just the average prices we have observed through July, we're at 4.8% compared to 2022.
Digging into that a little bit, egg prices are continuing to go down, hooray, but beef has done a turnaround. Prices had been dropping for most of this year, but not anymore.
Our price forecast for beef this year increased from 2.7 to 4.2%, which reflects a 2.4% increase between June and July in beef and veal prices.
The reason for that?
There's a shortage of cattle right now that's driving up cattle prices, and that's being passed along to retail beef prices.
But even with prices going up for many products, again, we're having general food price inflation of about half what it was last year at about 5%. And for next year, look for food prices to go up by how much?
2.1%.
And as we said at the top,
this is closer to what we observe over the last 20 years as an annual percentage price increase. We typically see something on the order of 2 to 3%, sometimes a little lower, sometimes a little higher for food at home. So 2.1 is about in line with historical norms.
So really not unusual inflation, not really deflation, but what Matt McLaughlin calls
disinflation.
Disinflation. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. For today's interview segment, I'm tossing it right on over to Agnet West's Brian German, who talks with Judy Culbertson all about the California Agriculture in the Classroom Conference, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. Here's Agnet West, Brian German.
We're joined by Judy Culbertson this morning, Executive Director of the California Foundation for Agriculture in the Classroom. And we're talking about the annual conference that's going to be coming up here fairly soon. And so, Judy, what's on the agenda for this year's event?
We are really excited about hosting our annual California Ag in the Classroom conference here in Sacramento. And we've traditionally gone north and south when we host our conference. Last year was in Ventura, and that was after a three-year hiatus. We were really excited that we had more than 160, 170 participants. So these are teachers coming from throughout the state and everybody kind of coming together to network and learn about how to include agriculture in their classroom. So this year, our conference is being held at the Holiday Inn in downtown Sacramento, September 22nd through the 24th, in conjunction with the Farm to Fork Festival. And that is a festival that celebrates all that the processes are between farmers and ranchers getting to your dining room table. So we have a great agenda planned starting on Friday afternoon, September 22nd. We are going to be starting our conference off with a real live Western barbecue out at a cattle ranch. And on the way to that cattle ranch Friday afternoon, we will be stopping at two or three different farms and ranches along the way. So the teachers always really appreciate getting to see real live farms and ranches and have an opportunity to visit with farmers and ranchers. So we'll be making a couple stops, and we will be then enjoying a big barbecue at our cattle ranch. On Saturday, it's going to be a really packed full day. We start out early in the morning. We have a couple different workshop sessions, and then we're going to be walking to the Farm to Fork Festival, which is being held in downtown Sacramento all day that Saturday. And while the teachers are there, we really hope that they'll have an opportunity to talk with different farmers and ranchers and kind of look at the whole process from farm to fork. We are really excited to be partnering with Visit Sacramento and hosting a stage presence, a 45-minute panel that will include a farmer, a trucker, a processor, and then a grocery store. So we think that's really going to be helpful to kind of let everybody, not only our teachers, but everybody in the audience, understand really what it takes to get our food from the farm and actually available to you in stores or restaurants or wherever. So we come back to the hotel in the afternoon, and we're going to have a panel of authors. These are local California authors who have written books about or that include agriculture. And we're very excited to have that. We'll have a book signing immediately following that. And then we'll take a little break, and we'll be celebrating California agriculture with a dinner that we call A Taste of California. And the Taste of California dinner is always full of fun. Michael Marks, your produce man, a local celebrity here in Sacramento, will be wandering among different tables that are sponsored by different agricultural organizations to see what the teachers have learned about different commodities, different educational programs, different nonprofits who are also teaching about agriculture. So that is just a really fun event. Everybody thinks of that as a highlight. And Sunday, we are excited to have Frank Mitlohner, who is a UC Davis professor, present to our audience talking about livestock and its impact on the environment. I'm sure that's going to be a real winner. And we look forward to that presentation. We are going to be having a farmer panel, which is maybe the biggest highlight for the conference. We invite a variety of farmers and ranchers to come in, and they talk about their operations. And then we have a lot of time for questions and answers. And the teachers just truly do appreciate getting to hear from the mouth of those who produce our food and fiber, and always another highlight for the conference. But we think it's really, really important that teachers have an opportunity to come together. They network with each other. Very often it's teachers presenting to teachers, and really it's motivating teachers to include agriculture in their classroom. Ag in the classroom kind of can fit into any subject area, whether it is math. Perhaps you're measuring and graphing plants that you're growing in your garden or in your classroom. Whether it's spelling, you can include the word irrigation, and it starts a discussion about what irrigation is by having students learn how to spell that word. Obviously, agriculture fits perfectly in science, But it really is in English. As I said, we have authors who have written books that include agriculture. So we really try to make sure that teachers understand this is a subject that is not going to add on to your schedule and your workload, because we all know that teachers are always overworked. But it's a subject that can make your life in the classroom come alive. It really helps students with hands-on opportunities. Students are going to remember when they taste and teach something in the classroom, or if they grow a plant and then have the opportunity to taste what that plant tastes like. We have so many wonderful stories from teachers who talk about how just including agriculture, food, fiber, flowers, forest, and fuel, that's how we define agriculture and help people remember what a broad industry it is. But bringing that into the classroom has really helped a lot of students, no matter how they learn. Sometimes it's the troublemaker that all of a sudden takes ownership of growing that plant, and maybe they have the best, you know, the largest plant that has been grown, and it just really can do a lot for individual students. Teachers seem to really thrive, and we're excited that at the conference, traditionally, 50% of the people are brand new, and we're really grateful for them taking time out of their private lives to come see what this is all about. And then half the audience is returning folks, and that really lends itself to the communication, the mentoring, the networking that goes on during the conference. And the fact that all these teachers are from different grade levels, different backgrounds, it just really is a nice common denominator.
And to learn more about the organization and the annual conference coming up on September 22nd through the 24th, you can visit learnaboutag.org.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The Organic Trade Association has announced additional resources to support the organic industry in preparation of meeting the requirements of the new Strengthening Organic Enforcement Rule. A webinar for SOE implementation preparation will be held on Tuesday, September 19th, beginning at 10 in the morning. The webinar is being offered as part of OTA's Water Cooler series. The new rule introduces significant updates to the federal organic regulations aimed at protecting organic integrity and building consumer trust. OTA personnel, along with guest speakers from the organic trade and accredited certifiers, will be discussing the expectations, challenges, and concerns with the implementation of the new rule, which will be coming into effect on March 19th of next year. Some of the notable changes that industry members will need to be prepared for include a requirement for import certificates on all organic product coming into the country, a narrowing of certification exemptions, and greater scrutiny on record keeping and product traceability. More information about the webinar is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
It's time to apply for the Conservation Innovation Grants. Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Terry Cosby explains the intent of the Conservation Innovation Grant Program and its two components, Classic and On-Farm Trial.
Our Conservation Innovation Program, it really helps us with looking at how do we move to the next generation of farming. There's two parts of this. We call it Classic, and we also call it on-farm trials. The classes is most of the ones where we work with partners to look at new technology and how do we develop new tools. And we always talk about this next generation of conservation efforts. And then we get into the on-farm trials, and that's where we work with producers and look at more adoption. And then we also look at evaluation of these conservation approaches. And all that's doing is helping us build new technology, look at new techniques, new approaches. This program is very important. NRCS is a science-based agency. Through a lot of this information, that helps us build our conservation standards on how we offer other practices to other producers. Because if we can get these things on the farm in a specific geographic location, the farmers in that area also can use the same thing. So it really helps us with our technology transfer. And so it's a very important program to us.
To learn more, visit nrcs.usda.gov and search Conservation Innovation Grants.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at Agnet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Agnet News Hour from Agnet West. Agnet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.